Cubicle Nate Noodlings, recorded on the 10th of January, 2020. This is my corner of the internet, where I jibber-jabber about the things that tickle my nerdy nerve endings, continuing with just better than a whimper, my 12th installment. So a dozen, or a foot, or a cup and a half of crap. Landing with a resounding thud today are AMD System from yesteryear's parts, MB Server Thoughts, Kaden Live 19.12, Linux-powered Festive Lights, App Image Launcher Review, a bit of follow-up on the discourse, OpenSUSE Corner, and Computer History Retrospective about simulator software. I recently posted about my computer build. In short, this is a computer build on parts that are in no way considered top of the line. They are all quite old, and that did pose a few problems. One, this motherboard would not boot from a software RAID pool. I was able to bootstrap the ButterFS RAID pool with a separate drive and root partition. It did add some complexity to my system, but I think it works out okay. Building a system is something I've wanted to do for quite some time. As in, several years of time. But, you know, finances and decision vapor lock had kept me from it. What pushed me over was this fortuitous conversation at a Christmas gathering last year. I struck up a nerdy conversation with a computer store owner that ultimately gave me this giant thermal take case without a motherboard. And a few weeks later, another fortuitous happening where I was given a bunch of old computer parts and an AM3-based motherboard was among the rest of the aged equipment. And that drove the rest of the build. My course of action was to stuff the maximum amount of memory, the fastest processors and such, which is exactly what I did, and I'm happy with it. I'm not going to belabor the process, as I've talked about it before, and I have a link that you can follow if you're interested in those details. And you're probably not, because, you know, it is a rather old computer, and although it's fast for me, you're probably rolling your eyes and saying, oh, you know, what a nice child's toy. As a result of this, I had tons of fun building this computer. It was a great learning experience, and that same guy gave me another case. Another Christmas present, you could say. Not as big as the computer case I'm using now, but far more robust in design with a water cooler, and now I want to build another machine. I'm looking at this case as it's sitting there, you know, collecting dust, then I have to dust it periodically, and I'm thinking I'd like to build a more pure gaming machine and leave this current machine that I built as just a server workstation. You know, I'm only using one of the video ports on it right now anyway. I don't see myself using all four outputs. I don't know when I'll get to this, but I think this one will be a project that I do with my kids. Used it as a teaching opportunity and turn it into a kind of family event. Currently, the machine has a Core 2 Duo CPU platform of some kind. I didn't really look into it too much. I think I would probably do another AMD build. Something newer that can take advantage of these new fancy CPUs coming out. I wouldn't go bleeding edge because that's a good way to bleed to death. But certainly something closer to new than what I have now. I'm not complaining about what I have now. I really like it. It's pretty great. Just, you know, something a little bit DOS geek worthy. I have fully evaluated my use of MB and given a little write-up on it. I described the installation process, setting it up, importing my media files, and so forth. I want to just summarize the highlights and the lowlights of my experience before I begin my next testing, which will be Plex. What I like, MB is super easy to set up. It's nothing more than copying one line into a terminal and executing it. It is super simple, and the script also seems to, at least on the version I installed, start and enable the MB service. It's super easy to add media libraries to MB. The wizard walks you through it in the beginning, and if you want to add additional libraries, that is also very easy to do through the configuration tool. Adding additional movies is nothing more than dragging and dropping, or copying through the terminal, you know, whatever you like to do, into that media repository. It will automatically index it and give you a notification about a new movie. It streams to just about everything in the house. Essentially, if it has a browser, you have access to the MB server. I haven't had any issues with the system in the approximately 5 weeks I've been using it. Updating the metadata and identity of any movies is as easy as click and search. You can change the cover image and so forth. Some of the movies I've ripped haven't always been detected completely correctly. For example, there are three different Grinch movies that I have. I had to manually define which decade they came from, but again, it was super easy. The Android application works quite nicely. I'm actually impressed with the ease of use of the application. It has a much finer polish to it than I expected. Now, what I don't like is that this was an open source project that went closed source. I sort of have an issue with that, and I'm not alone with that assessment. It was at this point that Jellyfin was forked from MB, which is what makes me incredibly interested in Jellyfin. I can't stream to my Wii, though I don't really blame the project for not supporting a 14-year-old game console. There isn't an app on the Homebrew channel, though I realize there's a browser on the Wii through the Homebrew channel, so perhaps more investigation is needed. Updates to the MB server have to be done manually. The server does not explicitly state that it needs to be updated, but you do a little digging and you find it. Updating it essentially requires the same step as the installation. It's the only real clunky part about the whole setup. MB is pretty great. Regardless of what I don't like about it, it's a great experience. If you're undecided on your media server and have a desire to try different options, this is a good one. If this is my only option, I could easily get along fine with it. Since there are two other media servers I'd like to check out, I'm going to take those around the block as well. I highly recommend you try out MB, as the shortcomings really are nitpick issues. I don't like that it went closed source, but the project, closed or open, is sound and is a great, well-polished experience. Now, this is my first media server review. I will have follow-up articles to this in the near future. If there are any inaccuracies or areas I need to revisit, you know, please let me know. I will take the time to make the updates. When I started using Kden Live about a year plus ago, it did take me a quick start tutorial to get going with it. I do kind of wish there was more instruction on how to do things that weren't in video form. I like video and all, but it's too slow for me to go through, and I'd rather scan down a page and see little clips of how each effect is done, you know, on its own. I suppose there's nothing stopping me from doing that. I could, you know, fill that gap, I suppose. Kden Live is easy to just get going with it. Once you understand the workflow, dump your video, music, pictures, and such in the Pot-O media, you know, you're off to the races. What I like, Kden Live is incredibly stable and reliable. Crashing is rare. I spent many hours of time editing, and not once has Kden Live crashed. In all fairness, it's been hours of editing because I'm, well, not very good at it. I have used and rendered video on both my Dell Latitude E6440 and my new AMD FX9590 system, well, new to me, without any glitches or issues. I'm impressed by the stability and smooth operation of Kden Live on OpenSUSE Tumbleweed. The user interface of Kden Live makes sense to me. The shortcuts, the ease of defining the effects, the transitions, as well as previewing the video, makes for an easy and enjoyable video editing experience. Even the scrolling across the timeline or through the tracks just makes intuitive sense, and I can today go through, up and down everything pretty darn quickly. The options for rendering video or even just audio has a straightforward interface that makes it quite clear what is happening when you start that renderer. Also, when you start the renderer, you can continue to use Kden Live as it does not lock you out of the application. Now, what I don't like. A couple things. The text editor for the title screens is a bit ropey. The cursor indicator isn't always visible, so I often have to make special effort to get the right location, which includes some delete and retype from time to time. Use of it is not as much fun as the rest of the application. Now, not so much a fault of the application, but doing video editing really needs more screen real estate. One 1080p screen is just not enough. Not the fault of the application, but it's hard to see and read everything that's going on without excessive scrolling. Finally, Kden Live is a great application with a lot more features than I know how to even use. I don't do any complex video editing. I don't have good video equipment, so I don't have a real high level of motivation to create a lot of video content at this time. You know, you can only polish a turd so much, and I'm often not happy with the video I shoot. I am happy, however, with what I can do with the video in Kden Live. It does make turning the lackluster video into a barely acceptable video to be watched. Editing with Kden Live is easy to use, and it's enjoyable to turn the mess I start with into something that is actually consumable. I'd like to make more excuses to use more video content just because of the great user experience that Kden Live provides. I've heard of people complaining that Kden Live isn't stable. Well, I think that's a bunch of hooey. Kden Live and OpenSUSE Tumbleweed works fantastically well without any crashing. I'm very thankful for the fantastic packaging and QA process from the OpenSUSE project, and I'm very grateful for every programmer that has had hands in every piece of this, from the Linux kernel to the Plasma desktop to the application itself. Thank you for all the time and efforts that you put in to make this possible. I have moved my Christmas time Linux-powered lights to winter time. One of those I like a lot more than the other, but by having winter lights, it still brightens up my space around me and pushes that gray, cold, sad darkness away. So thanks, Linux. Anything multicolored and Christmas-specific has been taken down. The strands of multicolored lights on my porch have been replaced by blue lights. The wreath and Santa are down, but in Santa's place is an inflatable snowman. Everything is now white and blue around my house. Not as much fun as Christmas time, but I think that there's a rule about how much fun you can have at any point in time in the year. I don't want to overindulge, and so you have to keep the fun during the designated times and be seasonally appropriate. I have purchased a few other little things to add to my display. What can I say? I enjoy talking about it, so more on this in the future. Of the three universal package installers, AppImage is, well, one of them. Historically, it's been my least favorite due to the more squirrely way of managing each application. Essentially, you have these files that are scattered about your file system or shoved in one folder someplace, and if you want to put them in the menu, you have to do it manually. When you downloaded an updated package, because not all AppImages support updating, you had to recreate or edit the menu entry, and it lacks all sense of intuitiveness. It's just incredibly primitive. Now, some app images would integrate themselves into your menu system and even perform their own updates. Most of them, however, do not implement those nice little features. Another step before launching it, having to modify the properties to make the app image executable. Now, it's not a difficult step, but it was another step that made it feel a little clunky to use. Combine those anti-features together, and it ended up being my least favorite universal package. Still grateful, just least interested. Step in, App Image Launcher. This throws a significant change to the universal package landscape. I've been favoring snaps for many reasons. The central repository, ease of use command line or graphical tools, but you know, I prefer the command line. Automatic updates, and a vast selection of applications has made it my first stop in universal packaging route. The next has been Flatpak. It has a pseudo-central repository, nothing official. It integrates nicely with Plasma's Application Explorer Discover. Flatpak has recently been better about automatic updates and does a fantastic job of theming itself automatically to your desktop settings. Lastly has been App Images because of the rather ad hoc nature and disjointed desktop experience that they have provided. They would respect your desktop themes and are a great non-committal way to try an application, but lacked a convenient and clean way to access them. I have used App Image Launcher for a short period of time, but it is a total game changer as far as the desktop experience is concerned. The ease of installation and removal of your application in the menu and the automatic organization makes it a purposefully integrated experience. You really can't tell that you're using an app image unless you are doing a right click on that menu entry. Now, on my OpenSUSE systems, app images are a first class citizen beside my system package manager, you know, controlling the RPMs, snaps, or flat packs. 2020 is starting off great in the software world. So now, why would I use the AUR? For my Biddle follow-up, something that doesn't get enough attention is the Biddle Discourse Forum. There are a lot of great discussions going on there, not just because I'm dumping everything that I'm working on there, but because it's a great place to help talk about your Linuxy experiences and just have a great conversation about interesting things in tech. Something I thought was very interesting, it's a little bit older, but the Linux Halftop was a thread submitted by Steve Mowest. He had a broken laptop screen, and instead of dumping $100 plus into the machine for a new screen and touch panel, he took the screen off entirely, added an HDMI to VGA adapter, and plugged the thing into a regular screen. Steve gave credit to another community member, Dalton Durst, for the idea. It reminded Sleepy Eyes Vince of the Commodore 64, where the computer was in the keyboard and just needed a screen to be able to be used. The whole idea was brilliant, simply brilliant. And it was an exercise in problem solving by looking at an entirely different solution. Well done. I highly recommend you take a trip to the Biddle Discourse for some very interesting discussion, discoveries, and ideas. For my OpenSUSE corner, I'm going to cover Tumbleweed Snapshots 2019-1231, 2020-01-01, and 2020-01-03. PostgreSQL was upgraded to version 10.11, had 59 line item changes applied to it. XFCE4 Terminal was upgraded to version 0.8.9.1. Respect the working directory settings in opening the initial window, fixed invalid geometry in Wayland, and several other polishing improvements. XFCE4 Branding was upgraded, several packages relating to OpenSUSE branding, which included setting the default cursor to Adwaita. Libvirt had CVE 2019-11-135 addressed. ALSA was upgraded to version 1.2.1.2, and the name was officially changed to the Awesome Linux Sound Architecture. No, that's not true. They had several upstream fixes, and UCM and UCMv2 fixes, and other enhancements. Network Manager was upgraded to 1.22.2, which fixed multiple issues in the internal DHCP client, including wrong parsing of search domains and classless route options, and failures in obtaining and renewing the lease with certain server configurations. Flatpak was upgraded to 1.6.0, several fixes including fixing some leaks, and not to poll for updates in the portal when there are metered connections. Catfish is upgraded to 1.4.12 for Wayland and GNOME Shell support. FFmpeg4 had numerous sub-package updates. SSH File System, or SSHFS, was upgraded to version 3.7.0 to give you higher max connections to improve responsiveness during large file transfers. Vim got an upgrade. I didn't know they were still upgrading Vim. It's now at 8.2.0063. Kind of a bizarre number, but had 54 line item fixes. So Tumbleweed Snapshot Reviewer gives 2019-1231 a moderate 79, 2020-01-01 a stable 91, and 03 a moderate 85. So not scoring quite as awesomely as it has been, but still some awesome scoring. Former snapshots are in the pipeline and are at pending stable scores so far. In my computer history retrospective, I was recently watching an episode of Computer Chronicles that covered the idea of simulator software recorded in 1983. They talked of flight simulators of the time, simulations of architecture and urban design. Even in the 1980s, they were saving money by doing virtual testing of environments before he spent the time and money on the real thing. There was a flight simulator used by the military in the early 1980s that, by today's standards, not so great. But if I were running that on an Amiga or an x86-based PC in the mid-90s, I would have thought it to be pretty darn impressive. It's interesting to see now the graphic capabilities of video cards today. One card, just almost any modern card, has such incredible graphical capabilities, delivering such realism. It's something that, really, when you stop and think about it, it's pretty amazing. I can't help but wonder how those ideas were sold at the time to punch information into a computer that, by all accounts, is not all that capable of calculating the vast sets of variables that are done today. Today, there is so much more that can be done with finite element analysis and software that you don't have to pay for. Examples of this are FreeCAD and Fusion 360. One is open source application, the second one, closed source, but free to use for hobbyists. This is a great episode of the Computer Chronicles, and if you're interested in seeing the early development of computer simulation in the 1980s, the excitement around it is pretty fascinating, and we can thank these people for pushing the technology from which we enjoy the fruits today. As always, thank you for listening to yet another rambling of nerdy nonsense. Feedback is always welcome. Send me an email to podcastsarenotyourthing@cubiclenate.com. I hope you tune in again when I give this another shot. See yous.